Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to Woo Dev Chat, a Do the Woo podcast show. Woo! Woo! This show is brought to you by Avalara, who wants to help developers make sure their Woo projects are tax compliant and done right with Avalara's API. I'll tell you more about Avalara later in the show, but let's dive into today's Woo Dev Chat.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Woo Dev Chat. Today with me, the one and only Mike. Hello, Mike. I was trying to think about a fancy way to introduce you today, but...
That's what you came up with.
That is fancy as I can get, yes. How are you doing, man? All good?
I'm good. Monday morning. Got to have some work today using New Relic to troubleshoot a WooCommerce site. So maybe there'll be some stuff to talk about that.
Oh, wow. All right. Today is a very special episode. We're excited to introduce Vedant Shu. He's a senior software engineer and a key contributor to the WooCommerce project at Automattic, I guess for the last 6 years, but he'll correct me if I did the math correctly. Lately, he's been concentrating on scaling and performance. He plays a pivotal role on leading the HPOS project. Also, we did talk about the pronunciation of HPOS, if that's the correct way to pronounce it or not. We're going to be corrected in a minute. He's also worked on numerous performance enhancements and has helped many merchants to fine-tune their chop to handle greater scale. So let's dive into his insights. Vedant, welcome to the show.
Hello. Very happy to be here. So I have been working for 6 years now at Automattic, which is like more than half a decade. So yeah, that's a lot. HPOS, I guess I pronounce it HPOS, but I do not think, we have this official pronunciation. So I suppose as long as, you know, we can communicate, it's fine, but it can get a little bit, you know, hard to figure out what you're talking about. HPOS, HPOS, it's all the same. No problem.
Right. Well, there's many ways to pronounce it. And most of the people we talk about HPOS or HPOS, they go and say, what is that? Regardless of the way that you pronounce it. So I guess you're right. We need to explain to people what that is. So would you mind explaining very quickly? I know we did an episode about this previously, but there might be some people who know what we're talking about and have the exact same responses to HPOS, HPOS. What the hell is that?
Yeah, so HPOS is basically high performance order storage. So what we did with that project is WooCommerce by default used to store orders data in post and post meta tables using the custom post types, which is a feature in WordPress, which is like a great feature. And we have been quite successful users of that feature, like WooCommerce and many other plugins in general. But the orders specifically, they can like grow really fast, you know, like for a successful site, you can have hundreds or thousands and millions of orders. And then storing them all in post and post meta table means that the site is going to, different operations in the site are going to compete with all these, this bulk of orders for all their normal operations, right? Because it's the same table, it's the same data storage. So what HPOS does is it stores just the order data in different tables so that your post and post meta table is free to serve your post content, to serve the site's content, products, attributes, and all those other things. So in a sense, it makes your site faster, but maybe that's not a super accurate way to say it. I think a more accurate way to say it is that it will make your site more scalable. So when you're receiving this bulk of orders, your site will not be slowed down just because there are, you know, like millions of entries in the post meta table just because of orders or just because of the orders that you're receiving. So it sets your site up for easier scaling, for your growth. And yeah, that's what the whole project is about.
Great. Do you think this is for all merchants out there that's using WooCommerce? Is this for just people who had 100,000 orders? Is this for people who are just starting out and they need to activate this no matter what? What is your recommendation?
So if you are starting out, I 100% recommend that you start with HPOS because you are going to hit that, like you're going to hit growth, you know, or at least you want to hit growth, or at least we hope that you're going to hit that growth. and then you will need it. So it doesn't make sense when you're starting out to not start with HPUS, because everything else is the same. You know, everything else is like equivalent. You will have very similar interfaces. You have all the major plugins already providing support with HPUS. So you have the same experience. So for the shops that are starting out, I highly recommend to start with HPUS, which is also the default. So if you set up a new site with WooCommerce now, you will start on HPUS. And additionally, for shops that are hitting growth or shops that are already using custom post types because they have been in business for some time now, I do recommend that you consider switching to HPUS whenever you can. Because if you don't, or let's say you don't have time now, then when you hit growth, you would want to do it, and then you would be like, then you would do it in a bit of a stressful situation, right? Because orders are coming in, site is a little bit slowing down, and now you want to, you know, when you start to plan it, it would be a bit more stressful. So if you can plan it early, that's like really great, because that's what we are trying to get everyone towards, which is just a HPUS-based future. Because yeah, we do want people to scale well. We do want people to have a great experience with WooCommerce at any stage of growth. So yeah, I recommend HPUS, you know, if you start out, but also if you already has a shop that's on custom post type, to plan your migration when you can plan it without stress.
Right. Most of the people don't have HPUS activated by default, I guess I would say. And most people are also afraid to activate it if they already have a store and it's a big store. I didn't want to talk too much about this, but I think it's a good way just again to remind people about how great of a feature this is. We do still recommend people to give their, like, invest a small amount of time in activating it. And would you say it is hard or very easy to activate HPUS?
We do understand the, you know, complexity involved in, like, so you're basically on a live site, you are basically replacing one of the key component of that site, right? You are basically replacing where a very critical data is being stored live, right? So understandably, it's a bit daunting and intimidating. The good thing is we have inbuilt rollback mechanisms, which means that you can switch to HPUS, you can switch to HPUS, you can try it out, you can verify if it works fine. In a situation where it does not work fine, the rollback is possible. So from the interface itself, you can switch back to post tables, and then everything would be, you know, as it was before. So we do have some safeguards. We do have some fail-safe mechanism, which basically means that even if you found some issue, or even if you find that you do not have the time anymore, or even if you, or whatever reason, if you want to switch back, you can. The main thing is that you do try to make some time here and give it a shot. So we also have a guide like on the WooCommerce blog, which tells you some steps that if you're running a high volume site, then what you can do, or like the series of steps that you can perform, some basic testing, some testing on staging, then, you know, how do you disable. So when you switch to HPUS for the first time from a shop that is using post storage, we would be writing data to both post and HPUS tables. So there is a series of steps that you can disable this sync methodologically. So this way, you would, like, basically you would have some ramp path to from post to HPUS. And if something goes wrong, you can, like, go back to post again, and that guide will detail all that, you know, what you can do and what you should do and what should you test for and what should you expect.
Actually, the reason why we got to meet you in the first place was a very interesting one, because Mike had this client who had this very particular use case, and he was asking me, do you know somebody? And I did know somebody else in that works in Automatic, and did manage a lot of commerce related projects. And it was very interesting to ask Darren about, hey, we have this particular issue. Mike has this client. We would like to talk to somebody who can give us an answer, or at least a very comforting answer about the way that we can solve this particular problem. Mike, do you want to share a little bit about this story?
Yeah, we mentioned it briefly in the first podcast, and it's a Shark Tank client who gets a lot of orders, and they had moved to HPOS but still had the backward compatibility thing enabled. And I was doing they wanted a backend troubleshooting project done because they were having weird delays. And I noticed this consistent query that was showing up that was taking 40 seconds. And I remember asking you on the way to go play squash, Marcel, and you're like, oh yeah, that's like, those are the HPOS tables. And, you know, it should be taking that long. And I was like, yeah, that the whole, you know, one of the whole benefits of introducing HPOS was that search queries and things like that were supposed to get way, way faster. I think you had a client as well who had a similar challenge, and we were trying to gather data, and I tried rewriting the queries to make them more precise so they weren't using likes or wildcards and that kind of stuff. And it still didn't really make that much of a difference. So then we went on this adventure to figure out who can help us answer, because this is not what was supposed to happen, right? And then we met Bedenshu at the WooCommerce party in Turin. And he said, oh, there's this new feature with these indexes that we're adding in WooCommerce 9.00 beta 2 that should speed that up significantly. And I think a week or two later, I managed to get it tested, and the same queries ended up taking like 100 milliseconds. And I was like, aha, it works. And the manager was so confident at the party. I don't know if you remember, he was like, yeah, just like install this. Like, it should be way better.
I do remember. Yeah.
Marcel and I were both a little bit skeptical. We're not going to lie. Yeah, manager, we're like, how is it going to go from 40 seconds to anything, you know, acceptable, right? Like, there's a long way down to 2 or 3 seconds. So yeah, we were very pleasantly surprised to see that it made things significantly faster. And we were curious about how you go into researching, developing, proposing, sort of testing. That's a major change, right? Because you're building a separate index for all of the order IDs, the emails and stuff like that. So it's basically instant. And that doesn't sound like something you just snap your fingers and it magically gets done, right? So curious what that process is like.
So I think for the context, you're talking about the FTS indexes, which is basically full text search in MySQL. So this is something that we wanted to do for a long time, like even before HPUS. But the our way of storing data, where, you know, we would store data in the post meta tables, was a blocker for us to do it, because you cannot add this index on the entirety of post meta table, because it would make your space requirements for the database or RAM requirements go way up. So I guess for research, even before HPUS, one of the things that we research is that what would be possible, right? Because just changing the database structure without, you know, leveraging the features of that structure is not going to just speed up the site. But what you would get with this sort of architecture change is basically collateral gains, which means that even just by changing that data structure, you know, nothing happens by default. You would need to write those queries, you would need to build those indexes, and you would need to do, you know, some work on top of it to actually take advantage of this new structure. So with that in mind, we decided to have this address table separate so that we can apply an FTS index on it. And so I guess it depends on doing some planning ahead on what do you want to do with this feature once it's out, once it's built. And this is something that a normalized structure would allow you to do, is that you can add more indexes, you can add very specific indexes on the data structure or on the query requirements that you have. So FTS is one example, but there are some more. So for example, for many shops, they might be querying some specific column more often than the other ones, right? So even if the WooCommerce does not provide a default index on that column specifically, the merchant can add it, or the developers can add it. So for research, we take a look at what we can do right now. What are the things that are blocking? So even with post meta, you can scale a site quite well. Like, you can scale. You have been in business for quite a while, right? You would know that, you know, even with post and post meta, you would have experience that you can scale a site quite well. It's just that there are some things where this structure would start becoming a blocker. You know, there are some features that you cannot explore anymore. You can still work around it. For example, you could stream the orders data to Elasticsearch and provide the search from there. You could do many workaround, but it does that. It's not straightforward. It's not simple enough. It's not something that works out of the box. So this is something that we actually did figure out what we wanted. Even if you see the issue, like the GitHub issue for for the FTS index, it opened 2 years back when HPS was still in planning. We opened the issue then that, you know, this is something that we would do once HPS is rolled out. So there are some more enhancements that we still have in mind, and hopefully we would be able to roll those out soon enough. But yeah, we, you know, try to look at what is currently possible, what is currently not possible with the existing structure, what are the blockers, and try to figure out how we go from there. But yeah, FTS indexes is something that's on our mind for a bit now. And I think for WordPress core project too, I think they also have a issue open to add FTS indexes for post content and like the main post table, so that like you are able to search post content way more faster than you can right now. But yeah.
How would you test something like that? So let's say, for example, you get your team together and you decide, oh, let's do this indexes, this full text index thing, and we have now a new table, and we're going to turn this on. And now you go, yeah, but first to make a decision, I would imagine you have to base it on results, right? And you have to have some data that would back up the decision about activating or proposing for everybody to activate this. And you know how, well, most of the people probably have their MySQL database settings set up in a way that it's possible to use it, some not. But how would you go about measuring the success of something like this and say with confidence now to everybody that this is going to benefit everyone?
So for testing, our like the primary test bed is some of the test site that we have that we host on. So basically, they're hosted on WordPress.com. So some of those sites have about 1 million orders or 600,000 orders, and we primarily test against. And so that's like the first step in feature development. You know, we would build these queries, we would like manually create these indexes using direct MySQL queries, try to run queries, compare the differences, and see if it's something that's worthwhile to pursue.
Yep.
If it is, then we would try to build it into a feature, and then we would do this testing, right, that we are doing right now. So currently, FTS are marked as experimental. One of the things that currently actually blocks it from graduate or sort of graduate away from experimental to enabled by default is that in some specific version, we find that the results are inconsistent. So I do not recall, but anyways, I think from version from 8, like MySQL version 8.2.24 to 8.2.31, you will see that the site will unable to create this index because of a MySQL bug, which then was fixed in 8.2.35.
Okay.
So this is something we learned. So once we had this package build, once we had this in experimental, we do not know how it will go. We got these reports that this person is not able to create this index on this site. We will go and try to debug. And then we will find out that, okay, you know, this is some MySQL bug. And if you have to upgrade your MySQL version to actually have this working. So once you put a feature in experimental, we try to make some noise about it, try to have more people use it. Some people would have great experiences like you have, and then some people will find out some edge case and report it back to us. So we would eventually graduate the feature when we are confident that, you know, we have resolved most of the edge cases. We know that this feature will not break sites just on upgrading. We know that this feature will not break sites just on enabling it. And then we will, you know, so this is the same process we followed for HPOS. We had it in experimental mode for quite a long time. We made a lot of noise about it. We had, you know, we requested people to, you know, try it out. Some people had great experiences. Some people reported us bugs. We tried to fix them, you know, as much as we can. And then eventually you will see that, you know, so once you release something in experimental, you get this like lot of bug reports soon. Depending upon, well, how big the feature is, you will get, you know, bug reports very soon. And then they will, like, start to drop off. And once they sort of stabilize, once you know you have fixed all the high priority bugs, you can, like, mark that feature as stable. So this is something that we did for HPS. This is something that we are doing for FTS indexes. But actually, FTS indexes is quite stable. In like there are some edge cases. There is this another edge case around phone numbers, which it is not able to search properly, which is something that I actually have on my list to look into today. But other than that, it seems quite stable. Hopefully, we will be able to graduate it too.
I guess also indexes is a feature of the database engine, right? It's not like something or some code that you guys wrote and are experimenting like it is HBOS, right? You sort of like trust the engineers that did the database engine on it working as it should be, as it is, was created for. And I imagine it would be kind of easier to make that decision in terms of activating that as opposed to HBOS, which is, or HPOS. I'm going to call it HBOS for the rest of the podcast. It's shorter. It's the way that we've been talking about it the whole time. So it's very hard for me to change it. Where you have this synchronization going on, you have important data copying. And so I imagine that is a much harder update to do than in just the index, right? Let's imagine the following. You were sitting down in front of a computer, you were talking to some friends, and somebody came up and said, hey, I have this great idea to build something for WordPress that is an e-commerce platform, and let's call it, for example, WooCommerce, let's say. What would you architect it differently in terms of the database that in comparison to today? So if you were to be able to, at day zero, decide about the architecture of the database, what would you do differently?
Okay, so that's a very interesting question. I also wanted to talk about a little bit of what you said earlier about the FTS indexes. So FTS index is one of MySQL's features. So you can do a create index statement and have it enabled. But it's a little bit more complex because it has a lot of tuning parameters. So for example, you can specify it to... So right now, we have configured it to be work on natural language. So it would split words based on spaces, apostrophes, and all the natural language spaces. But you can also create like just trigrams or n-grams. You can configure it to behave more similar to Elasticsearch. And so there are some configuration parameters that you can play around with depending upon the use case of your site. So this experimental time is also meant for us to figure out what is the optimized state of tuning for that feature is, which we may end up changing based on the feedback that we get. But otherwise it's much more stable than HPS because we trust the developers of MySQL very much. Like it's an extremely great piece of software, right? Okay, so if you think about the journey of WooCommerce, the CPT gave it, the integration with custom post type gave it, in my opinion, a much needed lift when it needs it. So developers understand custom post types, developer understands playing around with it, extending it, modifying its API. So integrating it with custom post type rather than building a new table from the start, I think was a good decision given, or at least in my opinion, because it allows you to, first of all, build it really quickly, because then you do not have to create all these custom queries. You do not have to manage the caching around it. You do not have to do a lot of things. WordPress will do the heavy lifting. In fact, you don't even need to create like an admin interface. You don't even need to figure about, worry about the access controls, security, performance, and so many things are just taken care for you, the programmatic API to access it. So it's like, it's extremely powerful. And I think at that point, using custom post types, even for orders, was the right choice. And for a new project, for new everything, if I was sitting in a friend circle, maybe over a campfire roasting some marshmallows, if someone tells me that we are doing this new thing, I would use as much existing things as I can, or at least that. So depending upon who you ask, depending upon what developer you ask, this is probably going to change. And I think for any product, there is no, there is no singular success path, right? For every product, it's going to be different. And you can make a product work using variety of paths, or a product will not work even if you have the best architecture. It's implementation details, right?
Right.
But I don't know. In my opinion, I would use WordPress things as much as I can and build custom functionality when I have to. But when you see this scale, when you see this, unless WordPress starts coming in the way, I don't think that I would engineer a feature to like work around it or to bypass it. Or well, the other case is that if the philosophy of what WordPress provides is completely different from what the feature intends to do, which kind of true in case of orders because it's never going to be published to the world. Like the post is eventually supposed to be published to the world. An order will not. So it's like it diverges from the philosophy a little bit. But then I would try to use as many WordPress features as I can because it would allow our team to start quickly, prototype rapidly on top of it. And then once the product is successful, then we can worry about scale and we can worry about, you know, what we want to do exactly. And or well, not what we want to do, but, you know, what's the optimum structure for it and how do we support our customers who are growing very well? How do we support our clients who are doing very well? And we should not get in the way of their growth, just for our growth.
Avalara wants to make sure that your projects go smooth. And part of that includes doing it right with their API. Their resources cover it all to help your clients manage sales and use, excise, GST, VAT, and other tax types across the US and abroad. You'll find it all on their site, and you'll be learning more on how they can help you during their sponsorship of WooDev Chat. Want to learn more? Just go to developer.avalara.com.
The biggest challenge we have with databases is their size, I would say, right? How big of a deal is it to have gigantic table sizes? I don't know. We deal with 4 million rows, 6 million rows in PostMeta sometimes. Is that a big of a deal? Is that not so much? What do you say?
So disk storage is not that much of a concern, as big of a concern as memory is, like available memory is. So MySQL will try to load everything in the memory. It will try to load all the indexes into memory, and if allowed, it would load everything, which is fine, which works great for the case that MySQL does. For us as a database designer, it means that we are not, you know, our indexes are smart. We are not denormalizing data too much. For example, in PostMeta, you have this meta key and meta value, right? This meta key is repeated thousands of times because, you know, every order is going to have the same meta keys, right? By converting it to columns, you're reducing the amount that MySQL needs to load because it's kind of oversimplifying, but it doesn't need to like load that string anymore. It knows that this is this column. It knows that this column is called whatever, and it knows all the values belong to this column. So the amount of data that MySQL will put into RAM decreases with this denormalizing. It comes into play. I wouldn't say that it doesn't matter. Like, I wouldn't say that the space doesn't matter, or I wouldn't say that the size of the database doesn't matter. It does matter. So this is first, that, you know, if with bigger database, MySQL needs to have a, like with denormalized database, such as PostMeta, would need to put a lot more data into the RAM. But then also when it queries the data, it needs to scan through more number of rows. It needs to filter through more number of rows. So that also slows different parts of your sites down. It's a concern, but you can solve it in the sense that, so one option is you can throw money at the server, but at some point it gets tricky because there's some limit to it, or that limit can hit really fast, really soon with the amount of when the data explodes. So yeah, so it's a concern, but it's not a concern when you're starting up, when you're developing this new product. Or this is just my very subjective opinion.
Right.
Many people will disagree with that, but it will be a concern. It will definitely be a concern as you grow. It will definitely be a concern as you start to grow, as you start to acquire more customers or more data. And yeah, it would be a problem eventually.
Hopefully, in Danish, we call those luxury problems. Like, hopefully, if you're making that many orders, you're also making money. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, enough of that is profit to be able to allocate to solving this issue, right? So I'm curious how much extra RAM is necessary for the FTS indexes on a site with a million orders. Like, is there any calculations or preparations people should do to make sure MySQL won't crash because it runs out of memory?
I actually tried to measure it during my testing, but I wasn't able to. Like, MySQL would always use the same amount of RAM. But I think that's because of the testing conditions that I wanted. That's mostly because I wasn't able to create this testing condition where it would load more data. Maybe it was doing something behind the scenes that it wasn't observable. But I suppose that it would definitely need more RAM, right? Like, it cannot, I mean, even though just because I wasn't able to observe it, it doesn't mean that it's not loading more RAM. But what it internally does is that it creates these words. For example, in your address, if you have, say, 22, 20, 221B Baker Street, then it will like have this row 221B, it would have this row Baker, it would have this row Street. And then in each of these rows, it would store IDs of all the different order IDs where this, you know, 221B Baker row Street comes in. So it's not like inefficient. It's actually, you know, it's quite a good data structure. As you know, we test the developers of MySQL. It's a pretty good data structure. It should have some additional RAM requirements, but I do not know what that is. Or at least in my testing or in my research that I did do, I wasn't able to find this exact number that I can, you know, point out that this is what it's going to need.
If you were testing on WordPress.com too, that would make it more challenging because it's a big multi-site, right? So the database is shared.
No, so for the RAM, I was actually testing it on my local setup to, like, you know, actually see how much the requirement increases so that I can actually figure out the memory used by that exact process. So that's why I said that it should have some additional RAM requirements, but I wasn't able to actually establish how much. I hope that MySQL would have some documentation somewhere that, you know, that tells you this, but it would also really depends on how different your database is. For example, if all the customer lives on Baker Street, it's not going to be a lot because, you know, it would find those repetitions. If your customers live all across the world with different addresses, the natural, if it's not able to index those words properly, if everything is different, then it would have a lot more requirement than it would have by just, you know, like when the addresses are more normalized. So maybe the RAM requirements cannot be as straightforwardly established as we can do it for other data structures. But it's efficient, I hope, or I guess, all that we have seen.
Ideally, if you have a database that is 2 gigabytes, you have 2 gigabytes of RAM, right? Just load everything to memory. It will work.
But then, Mike, you did test it out, right? Did you notice anything that, you know, how much additional requirement it imposed on your server?
So on this particular server, it's a huge, as 64 gigs of RAM, and there's a lot of it allocated. I think over 30 gigs of RAM is allocated to MySQL. So we didn't need to make any adjustments, basically. Like, one of the reasons I moved them to that host was so that they had plenty of room for growth because they get so many orders per day. And their live site and staging site share the same server. So I would have had to get them to like move by an extra server. And because it's a dedicated physical server, it's a bit more complicated than just spinning up an extra instance. But I'm having a meeting with them actually this week. So if I get any, when I told them I was going to speak with you, they were really excited because stores at this level, when like they don't want to move away to something like Shopify or something else. Like, when things are working, their team is well-versed in WooCommerce and is trained in it now, so they don't want to migrate away. And having someone who is very much working inside of core and knows what new developments are on the horizon helps give them a lot of confidence for, oh, like WooCommerce can scale and can handle our multi-million dollar business, right? And those are probably the kind of customers WooCommerce wants to keep happy, yes. You would think, right, for the benefits of keeping the project alive for the very long term. Then it fits customers of all sizes, right? Just starting out and those who have had the luxury problem of that kind of growth and success.
Vinesha, do you see a future where WooCommerce would be a standalone version of WordPress?
Currently, I think it's too coupled. So anything can happen in future. I won't say that nothing is impossible. But I think currently WooCommerce is too coupled with WordPress to be standalone anytime soon, at least. So we rely on WordPress to, for example, the product rely on WordPress a lot because, you know, they are a post type that does get published. But then we rely on WordPress for role-based access control. We rely on WordPress for the whole admin backend. We rely on WordPress for a lot of things. I think there is a very nice future for WooCommerce within the WordPress ecosystem and for WordPress ecosystem itself. But I would not say that there would be a standalone WooCommerce soon enough. Although I do not say it immediately, at least.
Yeah, the reason I ask is it has to do with what we were talking about and having these bigger clients come in. It's hard for us as freelancers, for example, to come up with a big client and say to them why they wouldn't migrate away from WooCommerce, because they know that the concept of commerce, it is a plugin that is for WordPress, and WordPress is a content management software that is more for, well, it's kind of strange in 2024 to say that it is for blog posts and for running a blog, but it's for so many things right now. But basically what people understand when they have to make a decision is that they have this dedicated platforms that are just solely there for the purpose of having an online store. And then you have something that you attach to another thing, and then that enables you to sell your products online as well. So it kind of makes it a little bit harder for us to sell the idea. Although, honestly, WooCommerce is so popular right now that most of these big ones don't even ask those questions anymore. But there are some numbers that say that WooCommerce is mostly spread in smaller stores than in bigger stores, right? So for people to make the jump and to decide about WooCommerce, wouldn't it be better if you would be saying that you are installing WooCommerce and not WordPress? You know what I mean?
So this is something for the marketing to really answer. But I don't know. I've always seen WordPress as an asset, you know, because I understand that even for a person who is primarily here for commerce, who primarily wants to use WooCommerce for commerce, they would eventually want to publish their product, right? They would eventually want to have, or maybe not everyone, but a majority of cases, they would want to, you know, publish their products. They would want to do SEO on them. They would want to have good SEO for their site. They would want to have their site look beautiful, use nice themes. They would have this membership area, have customers account, my account pages. And all of those things are, you know, they are something that we derive from WordPress. Like, even if you take a look at a WooCommerce and WordPress installation as WooCommerce first, there are a lot of things that are essential for a commerce shop that we derive from WordPress. And the features that WooCommerce, you know, use from WordPress is not small. Like, it's huge. You know, we pretty much use almost all the Word functionality that WordPress has to offer. E-commerce site will pretty much use all the functionality that WordPress has to offer. And I think that's an asset, right? Because, you know, not just the functionality, but it also means that there are more experts in the ecosystem. There are more knowledge in the ecosystem. There is a bigger community. There is so much that we gain from WordPress. If we have to make WooCommerce standalone, we would have to re-implement all these things again that we currently just get from WordPress.
Right. It would have to be a fork of WordPress and then put WooCommerce on top of it, right?
Yep. Something like that, yeah.
I like to ask these questions that are challenging that you haven't had time to think about them before. I think it's the most fun about that. If you had a magic wand, what would you change up in WooCommerce?
That's an interesting one. So I do not have a magic wand. I really hope I did. As someone working on performance, I feel that currently people have to re-platform a bit as they grow. You know, for example, they would change servers. Maybe they would migrate to different machines. They would integrate different technologies. There are some milestones that happen as you grow. This is the same, right? You know, migrating to a different server, or a bigger server, integrating Elasticsearch, integrating some different technologies, figuring out if you're at a stage where you want to look into horizontal scaling and things like that. If I have a magic wand, I think I would make this super clear, or I would have it done magically, that, you know, okay, now I need this, so this just happens. I need this, this just happens. So again, this is a word of caveat that this is my limited perspective. But I think people are not that worried about additional cost as they grow, because as Mike says, it's a luxury problem, right? You want to have these problems. But having to re-platform is annoying, right? It's a distraction away from your main business. It's a chore, right? So I wish that we have something that just scale you up as you go, figure out where you want to go in, and just takes you there, and everything is just perfect all the time.
Like some notices appearing on the dashboard saying, now that you have 1,000 customers, this would be advisable. Or, well, who knows, maybe AI will come in the way and help some of these clients scale a little bit better, because some of these issues are repeatable. So they're all the same for all clients. Right? It's kind of like, should be already some tool over there that allows us to like give some automatic tips of how to improve the store and stuff like that, right?
You know, maybe you just click on a button and you are now to a server that you need at that point in your growth journey. Right?
Well, to my defense, I would say we need two buttons. One is automatic one, and the other one is hire an expert.
Do you find that clients take for granted the technological resource portion of running a store? Like, I find in my own experience that it's like buying a car. They just sort of, they buy the car and they're like, this should just run forever, no matter how many people I'm putting it, how much crap I want to transport. And when things stop working, they get very confused. They're like, what do you mean? And I say, well, you gotta maintain the thing. You know, if your family has doubled in size, maybe you want to get a bigger car. And it's something that I find that the non-technical store owners just, it's like a shock for them. Some elasticity is required and growth and rebuilding and stuff. And I was wondering if you found something similar.
I can understand that as a customer or as a user of the product, me thinking that way. But as you mentioned, it's not that. So in India, there's this thing called, we call it Chota Hathi. So it's basically like a small pickup truck, a miniature version of a pickup truck. And you can use it to haul and carry stuff from your, you know, warehouse to your front-end stores or whatever it is. When you start, you buy this Chota Hathi. And then you can outgrow it, right? As you grow, suddenly it's not enough. You know, you have to make too many rounds. You cannot carry that much stuff anymore, or you need to carry much more stuff, right? So you need to buy a bigger one. You need to buy a proper pickup truck. You need to eventually buy a fleet of them, right? When you get like super successful. So it's the same in WooCommerce as well, right? You can start with a very small investment and then you can grow it as much as you can or as much as you want to. So this is something that we are actually trying to... So we actually just published a blog post on, I think, Friday. It's called Scaling with WooCommerce, which tells you about this path that, you know, when you start out, the principle of WooCommerce is that you can run it on a very small basic server, but it will take you to wherever you need to go with the help of magic wands, which we called as experts in the community. And like, that's the main principle, that this engine and this truck bed, like, that's all you need, and it will carry you. You know, you can put more of these if you need it. You can buy a bigger one, or all sort of this vertical scaling, horizontal scaling, integrating technologies, or whatever milestones that there are, you can do that. And that's the focus from our side. But that said, I also understand that I buy a small truck and I expect it to, you know, carry it like with me forever. The difference is that in a physical shop, it's like easy to see that you cannot fit more than 400 kgs or some unit of it more than that on this small truck. So you need to buy a new one, or you need to buy a bigger one, or you need to buy more of them. It's not super clear in software, because in software you click and something happens. So that's something that is a perception that we want to tackle. But you will see that as you grow, even if you want a bigger truck or even if you want a fleet, it will give you a very nice return. You will be in charge of everything. And it will give you a much better return on your investment as you grow your business, because these are the things that you are using to grow the business. So we are trying to change the perception of. But yeah, I do understand that with the software, people, like someone, at least even me, I just download it and it should take me to the moon. And but that's going to need a bit more work than that.
That's awesome. We do have a lot of experience with customers like that, that have, yeah, just expect things to work. And also the other way around, they don't expect to pay that much because they thought it should work in the first place. And sometimes we go in and say, yeah, but this needs fine tuning and this and that. Yeah, it said, yeah, but then I have to spend money and it doesn't make any sense. And well, it does make very lot of sense. And in the blog post, you were just talking about scaling with WooCommerce. It's really about that, right? It's about different ways you can scale and how your growth and how the profit that you have and how much you should spend some of that into scaling well. And it's a very hard lesson to give to people. And that's why case studies are so important, to show people how others did and how directly relatable it is for websites that run faster, how it converts better. And that's measurable, right? And that's something that, for example, Mike has also in his website a tool to calculate that. So it's very obvious to us that this is relatable, but it's sometimes hard to explain that to other people. Do you think WooCommerce needs to have more case studies like this, bigger clients, where we can really like point to them and say, look, WooCommerce is used in this million-dollar company. It's used on that website, on that. Because with WordPress, we do this a little bit, right? We do tell people who are the big institutions and companies who use WordPress. I personally think WooCommerce misses that a little bit with WooCommerce. Do you think that's the case as well? And I know this is more marketing than performance, but it's sort of like related, right? It's, look, this is a website that has 1,000 orders a day. You cannot do as well. So your decision with having 5 orders a day today is a good one because you can scale it to 1,000 a day, right?
I think it would be helpful, yeah. So this is, as you said, this is marketing. But we do have customers that like runs WooCommerce on some crazy scales. And yeah, it could make a lot of sense to document their journey if they are fine with it and tell people the infra that they are using, tell people how they are, you know, what scale they have, how they're managing it, you know, what is their average request times, what is their conversion, and things like that. I think it could be helpful. And let me see if I can ask some people inside to see if we can do this sort of marketing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's very important. And this is the first thing people ask us. Yeah, but do you have any examples and all of that? And obviously, Mike, being an expert that is more oriented into this performance tuning part of the business, and Mike does a very great job in writing case studies and almost like automatically selling the idea that if you increase performance, you gain in sales. And yeah, I think that's a very important part. And WooCommerce, I think, misses that a little bit, which we should definitely be invested more into talking about. And these clients that I'm talking about, and I've worked with some of them as well, and some of them was WooCommerce coming over to Codable and asking for freelancers to work on these bigger clients because they have these bigger challenges. And I was surprised to know, oh, this business, I know this business, and I'm not living in the USA, right? So I'm not supposed to know all the small, medium businesses and names that they have over there that go, that have ads on the televisions and all of that. So there's a culture around the businesses that is more US oriented than in the rest of the world. But there are some other names who come over to this side of the world and they get their brands and names over here. And some of them I say, oh, this website is runs WooCommerce. Oh, that website runs WooCommerce. So it's kind of a surprise for me. And I question, it shouldn't be a surprise for me as it shouldn't be a surprise for anybody else, right? I think there's something that needs to be done in terms of telling everybody, like all the other competing platforms do, right? They do announce who are the brands that are using there. And I think it's very beneficial if they would do that.
I found the challenges often that, like with the Shark Tank client, they made me sign an NDA. They don't want me to publicize who they are. Because once it's a business, there's money involved, there's competition, and people are always looking for a technical edge or a way to, like, how are they doing it? And if you keep your competitors sort of stuck on trying to figure out the technical puzzle, it takes away their resources from being able to compete in other areas that might be challenging for you to keep up with. So I think part of it, unfortunately, is just business and the nature of it and trying to keep things competitive and keep your profit margins and your market share. And like, it's way easier for me to get people who just use WordPress, like the blog or the content production. They're happy to brag about how many visits they're getting and how much things got better. But as soon as they're selling a product, it becomes, they seem way more hesitant. So maybe giving them incentives might help. Like, I think that making this connection with the WooCommerce core team helps provide it, like, hey, like, you know, we'd like to share your story. You'll still be anonymous, but we'd like to get some numbers out there. It helps build some trust, I think, and confidence in WooCommerce as a product for the long term. And we'll see if we can help make something like that happen. Because I don't know if you experienced that as well, Marcel, with if you want to write a case study or publish things that they're like, hey, like, you can say, I change the names and I usually don't use the company name unless they said it's okay. And it's very rare that they say yes.
Yeah, there's this concern about giving away some critical information that they took months or years to accumulate. And then just simply there's another developer who comes in and just talks about all the tricks and all the things that they, and sometimes, Mike, you know this, they don't even want to tell that it is you who worked on this particular feature, because then other companies and competitors will come to you and say, hey, but I pay double if you do the same thing for me and stuff like that. And I understand that, but at the same time, WooCommerce is also a business, I would say. and because they want advertising in terms of what clients use, what companies use WooCommerce. Two businesses talk to each other, and as you said, Mike, they will compensate for giving away that information to each other. And I think it's a challenge. We have obviously this challenge, and we have NDAs, and we are more strict to talk about it because we know the nitty gritty, and we know all the tricks, and we know what we did with the website. And if it would help immensely others who are struggling into scaling their online shops to know how the others did, right? That's the whole secret about maintaining a business. How are those guys selling 10 times more than we are? What are they doing? Why is that their website loading 200 milliseconds and mine is two seconds? Yeah, I understand how challenging that can be for sure.
So especially if you talk about scale, like how many orders you are getting, it gives your competitor a direct idea of the exact revenue that you are making, right? Or it at least gives them a ballpark, which is pretty sensitive info to give away.
And what Marcel was saying too, that like that there are clients that don't want me to even announce which industry they were working in because they're like, you're my secret sauce. You're my competitive advantage. And I don't want other people to know that you're helping me because then they're going to offer you money double, triple or whatever to do the same stuff. It's tricky. It's very flattering. It's a very nice compliment. But at the same time, I think when you get into freelancing and helping WooCommerce stores with performance and user experience and all of that, is you're interested in making the internet a more enjoyable place for people to shop and do stuff. And if you're sort of restricted to doing that for fewer people, feels weird. Doesn't feel like you're fulfilling your mission, I guess, in the same way as I'd ideally like to.
100%. Definitely. Vanessa, we would have 1,000 more questions to ask you. We would probably get much more technical in our questions than our audience would like us to get. But we would like to thank you very much for participating in today's episode. It was a pleasure having you. We definitely going to keep in contact because, yeah, this is what we love to do. We love to have these connections from people that are, first of all, smarter than we are. Secondly, who know about what's coming into the future and what's happening with WooCommerce. And thirdly, because you're very friendly and very helpful in answering our questions. And this is, yeah, something that we all benefit from. And therefore, we thank you for your participation today. And it was a pleasure having you on the episode.
Thank you so much. Pleasure was all mine. I wouldn't say anything on the smarter bit because I think you're all much smarter than me. But yeah, it was a pleasure being here talking to you, and you're all friendly too. So yeah, it makes for a nice time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. And this is our first guest that we bring on this new edition of the WooDev Chat. We're going to have other guests coming up. Yeah, this is just the beginning of it, right, Mike?
Warm up. Yeah. Yeah. I think I was during this recording, I was thinking that Vedanshu is like a performance hero. Right. Like it, you know, like he's helping speed up WooCommerce across countless stores. Right. And I think we need to have more friendly, approachable, passionate performance heroes on the show and have them share their experience and stuff. So I hope you're okay with that title. We can get you a cape if you want.
Please, please. I would go and buy a cape right now.
What color should it be? Purple or WooCommerce purple? Or
probably. Yeah. Probably. All right, everyone, thank you so much for listening in, and we see you guys in the next episode.